All right, so thanks, Francesco, and thanks to everyone for coming to the workshop. I think it's been an interesting event to exchange various ideas about asymptotic safety for all of the aspects of nature we try to understand, including gravity. Unlike probably a number of other talks, this talk is basically going to focus on some work I did with Julia Meffi, Francesco, Tom Steele, who's over there, Jiwei Wang, and Chen Zhang, when we actually made an attempt to explicitly extend the standard model in a reasonable way as such to keep it asymptotically safe. And some of the earlier talks have actually gone beyond this, so in a certain sense, this talk is a little bit anachronistic. But I hope it gives you a flavor of the explicit steps we went through. And I regard this paper as a bit of a proof in principle paper in which we showed this actually could be done for the model that we understand describes the real world at the energy scales to which we have access at this point in history. So another thing about giving a talk like this at this point in time in the conference is pretty much everything that can be said about why you do this sort of thing has been said by now, but I'll review it a little bit. The standard model has its name for very good reasons. It is the standard against which we compare all other models. It describes all the known subatomic particles and their interactions. And I think we're at an interesting time in scientific history in the sense that all the particles in the model have now been discovered. In some sense, over my lifetime, one might say since the post-war era, which is before my lifetime technically, but basically in the latter half of the 20th century till now, we have both experimentally and theoretically built up the analog of the periodic table for the subatomic world. And just the way Mendeleev's periodic table found a pattern to the elements that had gaps, the pattern made sense and the gaps were filled in over subsequent years. And the same thing happened with the standard model. But with the discovery of the Higgs and gravity waves, basically all the gaps are now filled in and all experiments agree with the predictions of this model. And to what is many people a rather depressing situation is we have no empirical hints, really, of how to extend this model. There are lots of theoretical ideas, but to the extent they've been pushed really hard, we've learned much more about what does not work than what does work. At this point, we have no hint of any direct hint, I would say, of any BSM beyond the standard model physics. But of course, as everyone here knows, puzzles do remain. One of the older ones that for some reason gets less attention than it used to, but I'm going to say it, the standard model has 27 adjustable parameters, which means that in order to technically make further predictions of the model, you need to know what all of these things are as input by experiment. Now, in practice, you don't need to know all of them because we often look at subsectors, but this means we have no more foundational theoretical guidance as to what all the masses of the leptons and quarks are, the 8 mixing angles, the 4 coupling constants, the vacuum angle, the cosmological vacuum energy, and I think, oh, the Higgs mass, right. So any matter imbalance remains an ongoing puzzle of which there's some progress, but I'd say no clear resolution as to why the universe has a preponderance of matter. And of course, dark matter, dark energy, some might say, well, doesn't this contradict this? We have evidence that there is something exotic. Well, dark energy really could be a cosmological constant, which is one of these. Dark matter, maybe, we don't know, but we don't have any direct laboratory empirical evidence. We have astrophysical evidence that something is going on beyond the standard model, but really we don't know what it is. And of course, as has already been discussed at this meeting, we still are quite far, I think, from understanding how to incorporate gravity, which we understand classically in with the other non-gravitational forces of nature, which we understand quantum mechanically. So I think these puzzles still remain, and I guess the good news is they keep us employed, but some of the bad news technically is here, is the LHC did the main job it was designed to do, but it didn't seem a whole lot interested in doing anything else. That's probably not quite the way to say it. That's a bit hyperbolic.
That's not your opinion, so you don't worry. Even if you solve this problem, you keep your job.
So I want to return to questions that were asked earlier in this meeting. What is a fundamental theory? And from the perspective of this workshop, the people in it, we go back to what Ken Wilson said, and that a fundamental theory is one whose couplings feature an ultraviolet fixed point. And there are several ways of looking at this. If it's non-interacting, we call the theory asymptotically free. If it's interacting, we call it asymptotically safe. And of course, it's possible that it could be mixed. Namely, some couplings, when they run, could asymptote to a constant fixed value. They would be asymptotically safe. Others could continue to decline to zero. They would be asymptotically free. But the idea is that there would be no runaway Landau poles, nothing that would suggest there is some further need, perhaps, beyond this. And there's been a lot of work done on this. I don't have the space to list the details of the references, and even this is an incomplete list of the people that have been looking at this in fairly recent times, with the exception of this group here, which is some 40-odd years ago. What we have learned, or what we learned when we started this exercise, is we took the very best knowledge of our beta functions and tried to see what would happen if we ran them ahead just with the standard model as is, and is no surprise to people in this room. The full set of couplings in the standard model cannot reach an ultraviolet fixed point. So the standard model, if you want to achieve this goal, must be extended in some way. And so the question is, how can we realize an asymptotically safe completion of the standard model? So what we did to achieve this was proceed in perhaps not a really sophisticated way. We added more fermions in a way that kept the number of colors finite. Remember, the standard model has NC equals 3, so we wanted to keep NC equals 3. But in order to proceed, we knew we had to add more fermions. And in particular, as we've heard in earlier talks, we want to add enough fermions that we can work in the large NF limit and thereby exploit things people have done in terms of modification of the beta functions somewhat beyond perturbation theory. Now, this goes back actually to the work that Daniel and Francesco have done, where they pointed out that if you worked in the limit of large NC and large NF in the Veneziano limit, you could in fact realize ultraviolet safety in principle. The point of the work that I'm describing here is we retain a finite NC, in this case NC is 3, and we add in vector-like fermions, and they could get their masses either by Yukawa couplings to new scalars or with explicit mass operators. To keep life a little bit easier, we chose option 2 to do this. And we keep them vector-like because it's the most straightforward way of dealing with chiral anomalies. There's left-right cancellation, and so we don't have to worry about that. But one might say one would like more sophisticated ways of dealing with anomalies. And so we, as I said earlier, work in the 1 over NF expansion. And the idea, as we've already heard from, I think it was Anders, for example, you can sum relevant classes of diagrams to all orders. And just by way of notation, this is probably familiar to most people here, dr sub 2 means the representation under SU2, and r sub 3 means the representation under SU3. So as pointed out before, and is actually discussed in these papers here, you can add up in the large NF limit these kinds of diagrams and obtain higher order corrections to the beta functions. The idea is that you define a quantity, G squared times the number of flavors, and you demand that quantity remain finite in the limit that NF gets large. So G therefore has to go like 1/√NF. And then it turns out there's cancellations in these fermion bubbles such that it is possible to sum over all of them. If you have an abelian theory, you've got these two kinds. If it's not abelian, you have to add this one to it. And the net effect of doing all that is there are HO, higher order, corrections to the beta functions for the abelian. That's what the subscript 1 means. And the non-abelian, SU2, SU3, that's what the subscripts 2 and 3 mean. And they look like this. They're functions of a parameter A. And in order for this summation to be valid, if we add in these new fermions, they all have to be the same for each gauge group, or otherwise this summation doesn't work. So A1 is defined in terms of the U1 hypercharge coupling times the number of flavors times these representation factors. This is A2, this is A3. And as I said, the different fermions that we add in, the vector-like fermions, all have to have the same charges for this to work. And even given that, there are a number of different things one could do. So we considered three kinds of models, I guess, within this broader class, where the charges were like so. We took strong triplets, weak doublets, and 1/6 hypercharge. Another one is where we had NF3 fermions that were color triplets but neutral under the other two groups, with NF2 fermions that were weak doublets and had a 1/2 hypercharge. And then we took model number 3, which were color triplets, weak triplets, and 1 unit of hypercharge but singlets under everything else. And of course, as I said, we had the right-handed counterparts to make sure anomalies weren't a problem. So here are these functions, and although they've been seen before, I thought might as well show what they look like. They are given, F1 is given by this integral over I1, and I2 is given by this function here. So H sub I is given by the integral over this same product of functions up to the constants A sub I that I defined on the earlier slide. And it turns out when you do this that there are poles, sequential poles at A beginning at 15/2 and then at 15/2 plus 3, 15/2 plus 6, and so on. And H sub I likewise has poles wherever the A sub I has values of 3, 15/2, and so on. And these do not depend on the renormalization scheme, where these poles are. If you added in further next to leading, or next to next to leading, I guess, but 1/NF² corrections, you might have that. But this is not an issue at this level. And we are basically interested in the first two poles because these two poles are what is going to allow us to obtain an asymptotically safe completion, an ultraviolet safe fixed point for these gauge couplings. So that's the basic idea. We add in some sense, the simplest thing we can add in, lots of vector-like fermions that allow us to remain in the large NF limit, but hopefully not too many. And in fact, as we will see, they are not too many. So I felt one should show the beta functions. Of course, to people in this room, this is not a big deal. We're used to working with these things all the time. This is color-coded, so you can see the standard model in blue and the higher-order corrections because of the 1/NF, the extra vector-like fermions, are in red. We included the Yukawa coupling, but at that time, we did not have the extra summation that was described in an earlier talk. So we only went out to two-loop order for the Yukawas that include this. And for the Higgs, we have the one-loop and the two-loop correction. So here's the standard model one-loop part of the beta function. The two-loop part does get corrections from the extra fermions, where this thing here is the Dinkin index and all the other notation is defined. So there are combinations of the various coupling parameters that appear in the theory, and the coefficients in the standard model are now known out to these relevant loop orders, as you can see from all these numbers being explicitly inserted in the slide. And we vary with respect to the logarithm of the renormalization scale, and alpha sub I is G sub I squared over 4 pi squared. Alpha yt is the Yukawa coupling for the top quark, because it's so heavy, the others could be neglected. And then this is the Higgs self-coupling lambda. And so these coefficients, I guess, that appeared in the earlier slide here, they're all known, so I'm just listing them to convince you that we didn't cheat. The blue ones are all the standard model ones. The red ones are all the ones due to the vector-like fermions. And so really, once you have all this, it actually becomes an exercise that I wouldn't say is trivial, but that I would say is a straightforward exercise in solving a set of coupled first-order nonlinear differential equations and finding what happens to them. And so here's the answer that we got. So the beta functions for the couplings, the Yukawa, and the Higgs are all given by the standard model parts plus the extra parts that are due to the higher order. And here's everything that happens. The Yukawa coupling asymptotes down here, so it's asymptotically safe. This is the U1, the SU2, the SU3, and the Higgs, and they are all asymptoting to finite values, so we do indeed attain a non-interacting fixed point. And we took these as the initial conditions from the standard model at T naught, which we took to be 2 TeV, just a little bit. T naught is 3, so 2 TeV is the energy scale from U. And let's see, the energy scale at which we're sure everything is safe is about 10 to the 14 GeV, comparable to the good old-fashioned gut scale, which was 10 to the 15 some odd GeV way back when. So we do achieve that. And the vector-like fermions are introduced just above this energy scale. Well, not just above, I guess, but a few hundreds of TeV above that energy scale. And how many extra things do we need? Well, 40. This is model 2, I should put out, which I'll remind you, model number 2 has a certain number of color triplets and neutral under the others, and a certain number of weak doublets that are likewise neutral under the others. So we need 40 extra color triplets and 24 extra weak doublets, which is enough that 1 over NF is viewed as comfortably small enough that we actually feel we can use the higher order large NF corrections to the beta functions reasonably so. Now, this is a lot of extra particles, but in my opinion, it could be a whole lot worse. There are other theories in nature whose first name begins with S that introduce lots more than this. Yeah.
So all the vector-like fermions have their mass down at where the strong coupling becomes safe. So what generates the other two mass scales that you have where the other two gauge couplings approach a fixed point? Why is that at three different mass thresholds?
That comes out, that simply comes out when you integrate the equations up. This is, we wanted this introduced where they come in. This one, I'm trying to remember where that comes. That comes...
It's just when it hits the fixed point.
Yeah, it...
But what leads to the separation of these three different scales? That's what I'm trying to understand.
You mean, why is this here? Why is that there?
So you introduce one mass scale, so I would expect that that essentially sets...
No, it's just... No. I just said they have different values, because they have different values of alpha. Division values of alpha. So it's some... takes a little bit longer to pick up.
Yeah. If you adjust these values, these points will shift. It's an outcome of solving the differential equations. I don't have any greater intuition than that.
You can get, I mean, to the extent that these differentials are correct, you just understand that by knowing the different values of alpha and addition and the fact how fast you have, and the different values of an f, each of them of an f, kind of related to when you actually did that for the solution of the equation, so we see that the slope is slightly different from each
other. So it's just the NF.
It cares about all this, yes.
So for example, alpha beta, the strong one, is always one that reaches first, and the one that reaches last is always the other charge. Because the initial value is high.
So question, I mean, so how well do we know these initial values at your start? I guess I understand this T3 was arbitrary, but then the rest of these was...
Well, these are known from taking the couplings we know at low energy and then running them up to this scale without anything else affecting.
Well, but I mean, there is uncertainty in them, for example.
No, that's the beauty. Sorry, if I get the data.
Yeah.
I think that it's not that convinced me, but made me feel very pleased with this picture is that the value of alpha in ultraviolet is fixed by the larger f. So alpha times an f is fixed. So the values here at the end, you cannot do anything.
The values, but then when you actually get them, that's a different question.
But you're asking about the initial values, I thought.
Well, that's what the initial values tell you.
That's a non-trivial consistency check. So yeah. Actually, they're highly non-trivial. So you provide the ordinary choice. Because alpha times an f.
Yep, we have pure.
No. Yep. In infrared, you don't have a choice. You have to get it in a true week.
But I'm saying that you do have a choice because there are error bars in these.
No, for you, but the actually is very, I mean, if your number of flavors would have been 2,000, alpha times an f is equal to a number, your alpha would be smaller than the one of the two. So if you had to actually, it's a non-trivial exercise, and that's where the non-triviality comes in, that you reach the fixed point, the condition, reach the fixed point before the Planck scale, that there is enough running to go back to the other 2 weeks.
Right.
That you can actually match it to those.
Because you're assuming that you reach a fixed point before.
Exactly.
That's not an outcome of the calculation.
No.
Yeah, you set that in. You want that to happen.
Okay.
If you make these numbers bigger, this kind of structure shifts over to the left.
Well, okay, so that's, I mean, those are, of course, choices, right?
Yeah.
The shrink, but also, sorry, the move to the left. So if you increase the number of flavors, the entire picture moves to the left means you actually reach inside. Sorry, I said it wrong. If you move the masses of the particle lower, closer to the electron weak, then the entire, for fixed number of flavors, you reach the fixed point earlier. But you might not have enough running to be able to get to the electron weak coupling. So it's a non-trivial exercise in making sure that this actually works. It was working.
But I guess my point is that this also should be probably a statistical exercise, not that just having one solution is not probably that difficult.
Well, we have I'm showing you one solution that looks nice. We actually have a number of other solutions, but I'm only showing the one that we actually published and worked. But in the different models, I got to say a little bit about that. There are other solutions in the other models, and there are other solutions even within this one. This is one that we chose because I had a number of very attractive features. But you're quite right, there are other things you can do. I'm not claiming this is the unique solution.
But I guess the thing is, so the idea here is that you have these, I guess, six parameters or so, and they have a flow, they have a six dimensional phase space, and they all flow in it. You know where you're gonna end up.
Mm-hmm.
You know where you are at probably a TV, more or less within error bars of measurements. And the question is basically, what are the possibilities? And I think there are still a lot of possibilities. I mean, there would be a statistical range that would cover. Well, even if you fix NF and NF2 and T0, there would be, I would imagine there would be some sort of range.
So your question is, if I understand correctly, is that a sufficiently unique answer to have an asymptotic LSE extension of the cell model? That's what you're saying.
Well, yeah, I think basically,
that's the one.
That
you tell
as
a lawyer that
do it.
So I'm wondering,
I guess that's one way to do it.
And the answer is not.
imagine also the viscous and the granulified theory. So you can actually do many, many things, and G-Wave will show other possibilities. So this is the simplest possibility to have at least part of the discovery of the solar model shift, because Rome has not spoke yet about the Higgs.
That's the next slide.
I want to let him finish.
This is actually where the fermions, the vector-like fermions, are charged on different, only under different gauge group of the solar model, but not simultaneously. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, there are other, let me just go on and say what happened. Let me talk about the Higgs for a minute. So the Higgs coupling, when you plot the beta function as a function of alpha H, you get this kind of curve that's a bit like a cubic, and it divides the coupling space into four regions, 1, 2, 3, and 4. And there is a critical value of alpha H such that if your conditions initially lie in this zone, then you're going to flow over to this ultraviolet safe fixed point here. Whereas if you happen to start off in this region, you're going to flow over to that point right there. And this is a point of vacuum instability. So this is the unstable region. This is the asymptotically safe region. And so there are other competing factors that partly was the subject of this earlier exchange. The standard model has the smallest value of this alpha H, and that the smaller this is, the wider this region 3 opens up, and in that sense makes it easier to enter it. But of course, we can't keep everything asymptotically safe that way. We have to add new things, the vector-like fermions. As we add them, that makes this thing move to the right and decreases the size of region 3. So if you add too many of them, then you're going to lose the property that you want to get, namely this asymptotically safe region, so that you reach here for alpha H, and of course, all the other ones become safe. It turns out that smaller hypercharge and smaller dimension yield a smaller alpha critical that make it easier. So you want to balance off adding enough fermions to ensure that everything becomes safe, but not too many in too large a dimension that you get rid of this region. And so it's in this sense, this is why we showed model 2. We did try a lot of different things. But model 2 that I showed before appeared basically to be optimal or near optimal as we carried out the search. And there is one caveat. If you actually take the Quartic-Higgs coupling naively and run it up to this value, you get something about a factor of 6 different than the value we used. And if you do use that, then you actually end up in this vacuum unstable region. So we, in order for this to work, we do need this value at T naught to be 0.0034 in order to ensure we enter the safe region. There's still some flexibility as to what the Higgs coupling can actually be, so we're not real worried about this, but nevertheless, it is a caveat. So we looked at the space of alpha H and number of flavors to see what would be best, and it turns out that we have to have alpha H bigger at the critical value, this blue point on the previous slide. Alpha H critical must be larger than that in order to ensure that we can get everything in region 3. And that meant the number of extra doublets we add, vector-like doublets, were 18. And the number of color triplets we had to add was at least 32, but not as big as 220. The 32 bound is needed so that the large NF limit can be considered valid. Otherwise, you can't trust the approximation. Whereas the other one, is determined by the bound of getting to the second branch of that function H. Remember, we concentrated on making use of the pole at 15 halves for the abelian function and 3 for the non-abelian ones. And in the case of the strong sector, you have to have NF3 less than 220. Otherwise, you're in the second branch, and the whole problem has to be redone. So, and we did aim, as was already said, to have the UV point below the Planck scale, but not really far from the Planck scale, and that in part is in accord with the philosophies that we have discussed earlier in this meeting in the discussion session. The thought is that if we can achieve something at gut-like scale, something thousands below, three some order odd orders of magnitude below the Planck scale, gravity is okay, and then the idea is that eventually gravity will be incorporated later. Now, there's no guarantee that has to be true, but I'd say by the same token, it's not an unreasonable stance to take given what we know at this point in history. So that was the reason for doing that, but we've already seen at this meeting there are probably other ways of looking at it, and they might as well be explored. So what about the other models? We did look at model number one, where we had the extra fermions were both color triplets, weak doublets, and a 6 hypercharge. They had the same features, but alpha H was critical, and the number of flavors got bigger. And if you want, if one of the criteria is less is more, then this is not as attractive. Likewise, model 3 had the same general features, but now NF really gets a lot bigger in order to get the standard, 3 times the standard model Higgs at 2 TeV, which is about the best that one can tolerate. So again, you can get it to work, but it's got, in my view, less attractive features. So this is perhaps a bit of a shorter talk. I didn't think I'd have time to discuss some of the other work we've done in the group. Zhiwei will say something about that in his. But basically, what we've got here is a proof in principle that the real world, with vector-like fermions added to it in the ways that I've described, actually can achieve ultraviolet safety. The Yukawa and quartic couplings, this is an important caveat, they were not summed to all orders. At the time, we didn't have the technology, but that is now not the case. We have the technology, and this exercise can be repeated. I don't know if Jiwei is going to say something about that, I think, so I won't steal his thunder. The initial value of the Higgs coupling, however, has to be above a certain threshold for a given NF. And if it's not, then it doesn't work. If you're below that threshold, you're in the vacuum unstable region, and that's where you'll flow. But if you're above it, then you're safe and you're stable. And so that is, I think it's an interesting feature because it's an important empirical anchor as to what these kinds of models and approaches can do. You can't basically do anything you want. You've got to link the extra things you add to what has to happen in the real world. And if we discover empirically that this is in conflict with that, well, that means this approach is going to be in big trouble. And as I said before, all models exhibit the same features. Model 2 is, I think everybody else in the group thinks this is the most attractive, the most viable. And so I think the challenge remaining is what is the optimal safe extension of the standard model that includes gravity? And here's a whole lot of other papers that appeared since the one that we put out that are now exploring this seriously. And so I think the good news is there's a lot of theoretical territory to explore that has the right balance of empirical constraint with theoretical creativity, for lack of a better word. One of the things that maybe we should discuss a bit more in the discussion sessions we did a bit yesterday is what is the meaning of optimality? What actually do we think is a desirable set of features for an ultraviolet safe extension of the standard model to have? And in my opinion, ultimately, it's got to include gravity or have an open door that gravity can be included. It sure would be nice if it explained as much low energy stuff as it could. It would be real nice if there was something nice model for dark matter that had an empirical signature and so on. But I think I'll leave that more to the discussion session. But I view this as probably one of the main tasks in this whole endeavor. What is the best kind of model that we can construct, the most optimal one that is safe, and that includes gravity? And when that's achieved, I think one way or the other, we'll learn something. And then if some future machine comes along and says it's all wrong, well, we all love falsification, don't we? Anyway, thanks for your attention.
I have a very naive question. These particles, these extra fermions, would they live long enough to change prediction on the CMB, for example?
I do not know, probably not, but could they be engineered to affect that? That's a good question. I mean, we are thinking, Zhiwei and I and Tom and Francesca, we're thinking about how that kind of, you know, how we can extend these things to get some kind of cosmological signatures. But I have no good answer at this time for that.
So I just want to make sure that I understood your point about the Higgs. So do I understand correctly that you get a lower bound on the Higgs mass from this construction? And can you, I mean, so you phrase it in terms of the Higgs self-coupling, but if you translate it into the Higgs mass, what would the number be?
I can't do the arithmetic in my head. You'd have, there would be, I mean, the Higgs self-coupling and the Higgs mass are not completely locked together. So, I don't know, would you remember?
So I make a small comment. It sets as a lower bound of the Higgs quantum coupling. So at that time, it's actually, we were really thinking of the early article I did, actually my first PIO in my life, it did with Tom. And we are thinking of the large coupling solution in Coma 1. And that work, actually, we really generated 125. We can really predict it. And with a slightly larger Higgs quantum coupling, exactly almost consistent with this. So which are around 3 times larger. So the thing is, eventually, you can have the same Higgs mass, but with a slightly different symmetry breaking mechanism.
So you cannot do with that. Technically, you cannot do with this anymore. And also, I mean, this paper has also the problem. The emission of the beta patch was just basically start seeing that this stuff is working. But then also the nice remaining carbon, like the self-coupling Higgs, and you have a coupling just for some, and we created the perturbation here.
So you can believe in the normal Higgs mass and get this, as Zhiwei said, by doing a leading log Coleman-Weinberg summation.
We also using the paper with the sample, I think, but we also the persistence used perturbation theory for the remaining carbon positives, which had to do with his standard in the case. So I would say the state of the art is that I don't think we have proven yet that you can actually do it.
There's some tension, but it's not, that's what I said before, it's not irreconcilable at this point in history.
So for these constructions, yeah, even other constructions, I'm talking about this specific way of. So I would say give 2 out of 3 stars for trying. To be fully honest. And sorry, that was somebody before you were back.
The new fermions, 64 of them, or however many, I'm not sure I understand, but do they all enter the same energy scale?
Well, we did it that way. You could, in principle, you could have them enter in at different energy scales, and that would change the structure of the picture we did. I mean, you could likewise add more kinds of doublets, triplets. I mean, the idea was to keep it as simple as we could make it. So let's have them all come in at the same scale.
Thank you. guess I just would expect to be kind of more homogeneous and add a few more at every new energy scale.
Well, you could. I mean, the problem with doing that, at least I would say, is you need... Well, you could argue it both ways, but if you keep adding more at different scales, then you'll need explanations for why these scales and not some other scales. Whereas if everything comes in at one scale, then at least, I mean, I would argue that latter way is simpler. But
also,
sorry, but I think as I say, it's interesting.
Yeah. Of course, but I mean, the simplest thing is not always the right thing.
No, it's not, but it's a good place to start.
Sorry, but can I just, because we also have discussions.
Yes.
And I think before getting to the new thing, they also discuss about fairness.
I think Daniel had a...
I was wondering with Bond, Hiller, and Kowalska, I mean, we've studied in 1702, I think, large... family of standard model extensions with asymptotically safe UV fixed points, which I believe do contain some of the models you've been talking about today. And I was just wondering whether actually you had a look into how these things are.
Yeah, we did. And I guess I listed everything here after what we did. I suppose technically I should have put that in beforehand. I'm sorry.
I was wondering whether you looked into how in detail these things are perhaps related to some of the aspects you've been investigating. So for example, concretely in terms of the multiplicities of the metafields you've thrown in, which I believe we have also covered back then. And so do you have different things? Is that different or is there some...
You want to respond to that?
No, I would. Discussion session where we can actually, this is a point which is interesting. So, how do we actually match onto different models? I think it would be very nice. I can say very briefly that we looked into that, but it wasn't relevant. I mean, this was so much simpler in terms of the approach.
I think I'm only saying that this type of model is part of the models we've been putting out some time before.
We can agree.
Okay.
We can agree with you. It's wrong with the library. But,
yeah, I just had a quick follow-up question on the fermions, because the fermion masses, they are relevant couplings, so they are free parameters, and that sort of goes back to the point that you raised initially, like the Zahnwald has 27 free parameters, wouldn't it be nice to have fewer? Now, of course, asymptotic safety relates gauge and Yukawa couplings, but then you have all of these free masses.
That's right.
So in total, if you sort of compare the two models, then wouldn't your model have many more free parameters than the Zahnwald?
It will have more. That's right. I mean, the first thing one has to do in this, I think, is just add in more material, which I agree means more parameters. Every BSM model does this. I guess one would hope for any of these things that ultimately you'd see some deep pattern of simplicity that would explain it. But maybe not. Maybe not, right? I don't think there's any guarantee that must happen. So at this point in time, you're right. Things are being added, and if the object of the game is to reduce the number 27 to fewer parameters, it's not going to achieve that. That's right. At this point in time.
Do not forget Daniel's side. I think we'll do the discussion. It's a longer.
Just a question whether you have thought of, along the lines of generating the fermion masses by a chiral symmetry breaking and that they wouldn't be free parameters.
Well, not in this, no. But I mean, it could be. I mean, it's. No.